Coming up on Golf Today, Shane Lowry stays bogey-free to win the BMW PGA Championship, clipping Rory and Rahm in the process at Wentworth. And wait till you hear what he said post-round, a shot across the bow. And Allie Ewing caught fire at the Kroger Queen City Championship, making five birdies in a row on the way to her third LPGA win. We'll break down her incredible week at Kenwood Country Club. And how is your offseason? A new PGA Tour season begins on Thursday out in Wine Country, where harvest is underway. What players will have a vintage 2023? Cheers, it's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
And a happy Monday. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. So I do ask the question, how was your offseason?
Well, blessed be Shane Lowry, because otherwise it's been the bleakest 15 days in my year since the last PGA Tour season wrapped up at Eastlake. But thankfully now we're heading back to the West Coast, the Fortinet Championship. Yeah. It's time to do it all again, Damon.
Wine Country, looking forward to that. We're also joined by Paige McKenzie on this Monday. Paige, LPGA still lots to play for in 2022.
Absolutely, in the midst of a big domestic stretch for the LPGA Tour. So no offseason yet for the women, but it certainly was a fiery Sunday, whether it was Allie Ewing or what we heard from Shane Lowry. So it was not a relaxing weekend necessarily for us that follow the game.
No doubt. You mentioned Shane Lowry. It is time now for the DP World Tour update. Let's get to those highlights from Wentworth. It was quite a show and quite a leaderboard, page. As you know, Rory McIlroy actually started with three straight pars. Then here is the par five, fourth. This is vintage Rory.
100%. We're looking at a high iron shot, able to control it, and a little bit of a ground help with the release as well.
I watched this shot and I said, you know what, it's over. I think it's going to be Rory's day. Now this for the eagle.
Well, this is all part of it, too, right? It's not just about hitting the great shots. It's about converting. And you knew with Patrick Reed that went out early and posted or was having a quick run, you knew you were going to have to be coming up with something. So these chasers, whether it was Rory or whether it was Rahm, who got off to an incredible start, he had birdies on 9, 10, 11, eagle 12, birdie 13, bogey at 15 before he birdied again there at 16. And Damon, it was a heck of a finish from John Rahm, trying to make a statement late.
Love these par five finishing holes at Wentworth. Here he is, John Rahm, chipping it to 3 feet. He would make that, get tied for the lead. Now here's Rahm on the par five, 18th. Really one of the great amphitheaters in golf.
It really is. When you see the stadium surrounding it and you can feel it build in this kind of climax. And for these players that are long enough and can reach this green in two, like John Rahm, it leads to moments like this. And what a way to post a score and make them chase.
Give the fans what they came to see. So he finishes at minus 16, a two-shot lead at the time. But here comes Shane Lowry, the par 3, 10th hole, runner-up to Rory back in 2014.
Yeah, and got off to a good start on his round of 4-under on the front nine, and on the 10th, able to put himself in good position once again.
Makes the birdie, gets to one shot back. Now here he is on the par 5, 12th, his third, the big man with soft hands.
And he does lead the PGA Tour, or did lead, I should say, the PGA Tour in sand save percentage last season, so able to show off a little bit out of the bunker.
So he's tied with Rahm, but here comes Rory on the par 5, 12th, his third.
Yeah, and if it weren't for just catching into that slope, would have released a little bit more. You can see the kind of elevation change he was dealing with, but a good leave.
Still makes the birdie. Now here's the flat stick on the par 4, 15th.
And this is where you really started to see Rory McIlroy, like, it's not over yet. We can still make a nice charge. And what a tremendous birdie there. And then on the 17th, it looked good for so long.
You can see the disappointment there. Stays one back. Now here's Lowry, the par 5, 18th. His second from 215, Paige.
And how good is this? I mean, he's walking it in from the fairway. What a tremendous shot.
Perfect leave. And love the reaction with his caddy. This is an event he's wanted to win for more than a decade. This for eagle.
It looked good. Oh. And it was coming down the hill, but just not quite enough speed.
Able to tap in for birdie. Gets to minus 17 in a one-shot lead. But now he's got to wait and wait for one of the biggest names in the game who won here back in 2014. Here's Rory, second at 18.
And he'd birdied it the previous two rounds. He's trying to get one better here. And you're saying there's a chance.
23 feet away, an eagle putt coming. Needs it to tie Shane Lowry.
Oh, so close.
Look at those eyes, that reaction. And then the opposite for Shane Lowry, the hug. First victory since the 2019 Open Championship at Royal Portrush, and what I think is one of the coolest trophies in all of golf. There he is, your winner of the BMW PGA Championship. A final round of 65 bogey-free over 54 holes for his sixth DP World Tour title, holding off the likes of Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. And afterwards, Shane spent some time with Rex Hocker.
Shane closing 65 for a one-stroke lead. Now, I watched and scoring a little bit, and the emotions were showing. This is your first win since the Open Championship. What are the emotions right now?
I'm pretty happy, to be honest. I'm relief. I gave myself a great chance today. I've given myself a few chances this year, twice this year. Over in America, I've been, two ahead with five to play and didn't win either of those. So I think this is an important one for me mentally to get as well, because if I didn't win today, I think maybe I start to doubt myself, or maybe you start to ask questions. But to get over the line was pretty good. And, to do it against the likes of Rory and John Rahm, two of the greatest golfers in the world is very kind of pleasing.
Second shot on 18, you seem to walk it off a little bit. For those of us who will never get to do that, what does that feel like?
That's the greatest feeling in the world. I had it was a good 5-iron. I needed to hit it. And the very minute I hit it, I actually pulled it like a couple of yards from where I was aiming. And it was just, it was the very minute I hit it, I knew it was perfect. And if anything, I actually thought it was going to be closer, because I thought it was going to run down the green. And then I got down there and I saw that Rory didn't birdie 17. So I was pretty happy with that. But, I said to Bo, I said, I still need to try and hold it, but just kind of drop it in. And I left it just short. But, thankfully, somehow Rory's putt missed. And, I won. So it's great.
You've been close here so many times, this being the flagship event. What does it mean to you to win here?
It means a lot. I think I don't play that much in Europe. I play, a few times every year, and I try and play as much as I can. So I like to support the tour whenever I can. And to win the biggest event in Europe and the biggest event on our calendar, it means so much to me. It means so much to my team. It just means so much to everyone, and I'm just so happy that I could do it.
Well, Lowry becomes the first Irishman to win this event in 64 years since Harry Bradshaw. 1958, Bradshaw, of course, a runner-up in the 1949 Open, 70 years before Shane Lowry won that major championship at Royal Portrush. That was his last victory. And this weekend, he beat out Rory McIlroy 8 years after finishing runner-up to McIlroy at the same event. And Paige, you've watched Shane Lowry now for several years. You've seen him win a major championship on home turf, a great peak for his career. Quiet few years since, now he wins again against another elite field. What do you like in what you see in Shane Lowry?
Well, I think one of the things that he's known for is his ball striking, how well he hits it. And I think a lot of it's attributed to his golf swing. And he has what I would consider more of a hands-driven golf swing, something that requires maybe a little bit more timing, but it certainly looks more natural. So keep an eye on how he transitions. There's just a looseness, or a softness, I should say, at his transition at the top. And it reminds me of a couple other players that we've seen over the years, and that's John Daly, who also has been known for great hands. And not only in the golf swing, but also with the short game, and that's something that Shane Lowry also excels in. Freddie Couples is another good example of somebody that has that kind of fluid tempo, but also creates the speed and the softness with the hands that also pays off in the short game. I mentioned that Shane Lowry was number one on the PGA Tour this year in sand save. He was third overall in scrambling. And I would say that most of the scrambling is coming from the short game and less so than the putting. And for me, that's the thread that ties the three of them together, in addition to it showing up in the full swing. It's not a type of full swing that's taught often. I think it's very difficult to teach somebody to use their hands. I think it's something that's more innate. And I think that's what I have seen from Shane Lowry over the course of his career.
Wow, I love that Lowry couples comp. And I know Paige is from the state of Washington. Nice to work in one of her heroes into this segment. I tell you what, I think the major championship is the hardest to win, but I think maybe that next hardest win is the win after the major championship. And for Shane, it had been a few years, and he'd been close in this event specifically, and he'd been close in other events. But to me, the big takeaway was the exhale, because winning a major championship, Eamon, it is such a life-changing moment.
It is, and it wasn't it interesting, a guy who's been at that peak, and we heard him yesterday in his interviews afterwards talk about the anguish and how all the bad shots over the years at Wentworth that had cost him the various tournaments there over the years, how they all started to come back into his mind during the course of play yesterday. But if you call Central Casting and ask them for the affable Irishman, they're going to send you Shane Lowry. Mm. And he's just the everyman character. But there's a lot more to Shane Lowry than that. And he is an affable every man, but there's a fiery competitiveness in Shane Lowry. And Shane's the kind of guy who keeps scores. It was interesting that it was very quick comment to Rory. As soon as he saw Rory, we're one all here, remembering that Rory had clipped him here back in 2014. But the history is a little more recent than that as well. Rory birdied 16 and 18 at the PGA Championship in the second of the three FedEx Cup playoff events. Doing that contributed to Shane Lowry finishing 31st and missing the Tour Championship by one spot. And they were both aware of that at the time, but, you know, you got to do your job. Go ahead, make as many birdies as you need.
Right.
But there's definitely, they're aware of where they are in relation to each other. I think they have a very good relationship with each other. And when Lowry said to Shane, you know, or when he said to Rory, you've won enough, it's that to me was Shane kind of G himself up a little bit, saying it's time for me to actually deliver on the promise that I've had, that I've shown before, and that I've been slumping into. His credit, Stephen Sweeney, his putting coach, another Irish guy, has done a tremendous amount of work with him. He's never a spectacular putter. He ranked 63rd on the PGA Tour last year in strokes gained putting, but the year before that he was 140th, and the year before that he was 163rd. Mm. So when you do everything else as well as Shane Lowry's capable of doing it, then you don't really have to excel.
Yeah, and athletes remember the slights. They keep them in their hip pocket, and sometimes closer to, no, hey, he knew that Alex Noren had shot 62, you know, and he was in contention back in 2017, and remembering finishing just short of Rory in 2014. What stands out to me, though, Eamon and Paige, was what he said after the round, kind of in this era of fractured golf, that this victory had greater significance beyond the trophy.
Winning is always an emotional experience. We can see that from your reaction. Were the circumstances this tournament was played in, did they heighten those emotions?
I think so, yeah. I think so. You know, I made no secrets as to how I feel about the whole thing at the start of the week, and I wanted to go out and win this tournament for myself, first and foremost. But I think for this tour, and, you know, everyone that has stayed loyal to this tour and everyone that's done everything for this tour, I really feel like, you know, this is one for the good guys.
One for the good guys, this story of traditional professional golf versus live golfers, as we take a look at the finishes by the players who also compete on the live golf circuit. You see Taylor Gooch there. Patrick Reed had a strong week, as did a former world number one in Lee Westwood. And there you see at the very bottom, Sergio Garcia, a longtime lion of the DP World Tour, withdrawing after one round, Eamon.
Yeah, when play resumed Saturday, Garcia was listed as a WD from the BMW PGA Championship. He shot a 4-over 76 in the first round before play was suspended. He did not provide a reason to tournament organizers for the withdrawal, but he did, however, make an appearance the same day 5,000 miles away in Texas with his wife Angela at the Longhorns game against Alabama.
5,000 miles away from Wentworth, which brings us to the takeaway. What is your takeaway on that storyline? Here is 42-year-old Sergio Garcia, you know, wanting to work his way back into the DP World Tour, and then, poof, he's gone after one round, robbing someone potentially of a spot.
Who could imagine that Sergio would turn out to be the unprofessional, petulant character in this story? Alfredo Garcia Heredia was the first guy on the alternates list, a fellow Spaniard. of Sergio is he's playing for his livelihood right now. The top 120 in the race to Dubai secure their playing privileges for next year. He's 139th, a start he could have used. Sergio said he was asked before this tournament, you know, you're conscious of not being welcome because of the live dynamic that's going on and other players may not welcome you. And Sergio pointed out that he wanted to support the DP World Tour and his line was too bad for them. And I guess it was for his fellow countrymen that it was too bad that Sergio decided after one fairly indifferent round of golf that he split and did not extend the courtesy of an explanation for the tournament organisers. But it's very much on brand for Sergio Garcia over the years. You know, this is the same guy who flung a shoe into the crowd in a European Tour event years ago. Same guy who spat into the cup and left it there for the groups coming behind him. Yeah. It's the same guy who's flipped off fans, who made a racially charged comment about Tiger Woods, who blamed the bunker rakers at Carnoustie that he didn't win the Open Championship back in 2007. Yeah. There is no more infantile, unprofessional man that's played the PGA Tour, and the Saudis are lucky to have him.
And destroyed greens in Saudi Arabia as well.
Yeah, so he's beyond the pale for the Saudis when he threw a conniption fit in a tournament there and defaced five greens and was disqualified during the final round. So I would argue that's an achievement almost as impressive as winning the Masters, that he finally located what is the Saudi tolerance for unseemly behaviour.
And Eamon wrote a great column on Golf Week on Sergio this past weekend. Paige, how about for you? Because to me, it just seems like this line between professional golf traditionally and live golf is getting more and more defined.
It's getting more contentious as well. And I think it's very interesting that it's really, I believe, since the lawsuits have happened that the players have really stuck to their ground and more vocally expressed where they stand in all this. And I feel like maybe it's been an awakening. I think perhaps players were naive to what this meant, what this other tour meant to their livelihood. And now they've come to realize that it's a serious threat to the future of the PGA Tour or the European Tour. So now they feel the sense of defending it. I think that the narrative has changed, Eamon. I'd be curious to see or hear what you had to say, because I think there's been this moral argument of where the money is coming from. It's coming from Saudi Arabia. It's coming from a bad place, a quote-unquote bad place. So therefore, you should not want to do it. I also think there's the moral argument that this is potentially undermining the tour that built you or that gave you a place to play, a home to call home. So I think there's an equally substantive argument that the players are finally now understanding and getting.
I would agree with you on that, Paige. I think the moral argument, it's almost as though people around golf, I suppose the media in golf, tried to weigh in on that one more. I don't know that it was ever a huge deal for so many of the players, but the practicalities of it are a deal for the players. Now, particularly when players who've chosen to stay loyal to different tours see the live guys coming back and saying, well, we want to cherry pick the most lucrative events here. And then that just leaves other tour loyalists on the outs because there's no room for them in the field. And I think that's where you're seeing this kind of raw emotions come in. As great Irish journalist Paul Kimmage wrote an interesting story yesterday following Rory, Shane Lowry and Graham McDowell around Wentworth during the week. And it left you with a very forlorn picture of Graham McDowell, another affable character who's suddenly feeling the chill winds blowing in his direction that he's never experienced before in his career. And I think that's one of these storylines that maybe it was last season's storyline, but it's going to be next season's storyline too.
We're also seeing this motivated faction of golfers on the traditional PGA Tour and DP World Tours. They're not just being vocal, and I'm talking about Rory and Justin Thomas, Will Zalatoris, Shane Lowry, Billy Horschel. They're backing up their words with fantastic play. And to hear Shane Lowry at the end of it all say, this is one for the good guys, and doggone it, this was on my mind this week. And we saw Rory in Atlanta and in Canada. I mean, this contentious moment in the game is also leading to some fantastic golf inside the ropes from these players.
Wasn't it interesting that Patrick Reed posted that 63 early yesterday and set that number up there, and then suddenly three of the tour loyalists, John Rahm and then Rory and Shane Lowry, went on to pass him. But can you imagine what the tension level would be like had they decided to finish the tournament on Monday and you're heading out there with Lowry, Rahm and Rory up top with Taylor Gooch there, Patrick Reed not that far behind either. It would have led to a lot of fireworks out there, I would think.
I have a feeling we might be seeing a little bit of that tension in 2023 as well.
Well, still to come on Golf Today, the LPGA Tour's Ali Ewing found the winner's circle for the third straight season. We'll break down her victory in Cincinnati, and Beth Ann Nichols will join us to talk about the biggest storylines coming out of the Kroger Queen City Championship.
Golf Today, brought to you by WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And by Bushnell Golf and the new Wingman, crank up your game.
Kroger Queen City Championship highlights Paige McKenzie, Ali Ewing on the par 4 13th.
Yeah, and she's known for being a great ball striker, and this is a hole location with a club in hand that you certainly can be aggressive on, so trying to make a serious statement here on the back nine.
Xiyu Lin, though, on the same hole, trying to answer.
Yeah, she wasn't going away at all. A great looking wedge shot in for her.
Even closer than Ali. This for birdie and solo lead.
Just able to drip it in the edge. Incredible pace on a lot of her putts that she had.
Lynn with the answer. Oh, walk it in. Responds, getting to 19 under. A fantastic duel. Now here's the 14th hole. This par three over water gets your attention.
It certainly does, especially with this front hole location. It was bringing that front edge of the green into play, and you had to strike it well. That was a great shot.
You would make birdie get to 20 under, giving her the solo lead. Now showing a little bit of nerves, perhaps. It's a poor shot in the par 5, 15.
Well, I mean, we've all done it before, right, Damon?
Oh,
you're
for sure.
Getting excited, hitting the 3-wood, par 5. You want to give it a go. A little bit of a miss hit, but still in okay position now from only 110 yards into this par 5. She's able to control this wedge distance extremely well. A little bit of zip to give her another nice opportunity.
Now that's the thing. The pros, they rarely hit poor shots back to back. She would convert for birdie, get to 21 under. Now in the rough here on the par 4, 16th.
And maybe a little bit of a miscue in the rough off of the tee, but playing the release nicely. And when she's on a stretch like this, you're thinking, can she do it? Can she really make 5 birdies in a row? And yes, incredible.
The par 4, 18th, her third from just off the green.
Yeah, only 25% of the field hit the screen in regulation, so it certainly wasn't a bad lead, but not an easy two-putt to win it, especially when you had Lynn with this opportunity. And yes, she would bury it. So now the pressure's back on Ali to be able to make that 2.5, 3-footer to get it done.
Oof. Able to do it, and you can see the exultation in Ali Ewing, and the fans came out to Cincinnati. Great duel. Final round, 66 for Ali Ewing, 6 under on the round, able to win the tournament. And by the way, the win on Sunday is the third of her career. She's now won at least one victory in 3 consecutive seasons, dating back to becoming a Rolex first-time winner in 2020. And after the win, she caught up with our own Jim Gallagher Jr.
Just the key for me has just been knowing that it's in there, and the change that I made, you know, in the couple weeks before Canada was big, and just shortening the backstroke. And in Canada, I was really close to putting some stuff together, but it was still kind of a little finicky. But this week, like you said, I saw putts go in, and once I saw them go in, I had that confidence.
What are you telling yourself when you're going through the season like you have? You know you can win, you've won. What are you telling yourself to kind of keep positive?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has just been trying to lean on what I've seen myself do. Obviously, I've got an incredible support system, my coaches, my family, my husband, and they just keep drilling in me, you know, like it's there, I promise it's there. Keep working at it, it's there. And, I just really trusted it and knew that if I kept working at it, that it was going to be there.
You were with the women's team from Mississippi State last week. You saw some good golf. Charlie told them, do your job. You were told, do your job. How were you able to do your job today?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first eight holes, it was just pars. I don't think I missed any greens. I was just kind of two-putting. I hit a couple of good putts. But I think a big putt for me was that par putt that I made on seven. Just, I mean, it was a six-footer, but I saw a six-footer go in and was able to get to nine and roll in an 18-footer down the hill. And then it kind of calmed me down. But, honestly, I struggle with nerves all day because I just haven't been able to put this together for a full tournament this year. So to see it and see all the results finally come to play, It's really exciting.
Allie went to Mississippi State. Jim Gallagher Jr., a member of the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame, so some kismet between those two. Paige, let's hone in on Allie Ewing. The flat stick was working for her on Sunday. Were you surprised to see that part of her game click down the stretch? Because it can be a little bit shaky from time to time.
You know, it has been historically, but she talked about how clutch that par save was on eight. Well, that wasn't the only big putt. You can't have five birdies in a row on a back nine on Sunday without having made a lot of putts, and that's what we saw from Allie Ewing yesterday. But that is in stark contrast to what she's been doing this season. She mentioned that the change she made a couple of weeks ago, well, she needed a change. In 2022, it's been her worst statistical putting year. And you can see the putts per green in regulation, a tie for 138. The putts per round, look at that, nearly 32. I mean, well over 31 putts per round. That 162 rank, that's actually the worst on the LPGA Tour this season. And that is actually in contrast to what she even performed last year. Allie Ewing leads the LPGA Tour this year in greens in regulation. She's a tremendous ball striker and has been since the beginning of her career, but even last year, she was 45th in putts per green in regulation. So there's been a massive drop-off for Allie Ewing this season on the LPGA Tour, but a tremendous week this week where she had 27 putts on Sunday in order to get it done. And you can tell the patience that she must have had to kind of get through those tough times and believe that there was better days on the other side. And certainly Sunday and this week was better for Allie Ewing on the greens.
Hey, Chiyu Lin looked pretty surgical yesterday in that closing 65 to finish second. Mm-hmm. And she shot four rounds in the 60s last week on the LPGA Tour as well. What do you attribute this sudden rise in form for her?
It's incredible that you have a player that twice this season has shot better than 21 under. That's something Grant Boone pulled out of the hat yesterday on the broadcast. And he mentioned going back to Thailand in the early season, shot 26 under and lost in a playoff. She shot 6 under on that final round to not get it done this Sunday. Again, posted, 7 under on her final round and not able to get it done. Just coming into a buzzsaw with Allie Ewing. But when you look at Chiyu Lin and the progress that she's made throughout her career, she's become one of the best players in the world. She's now ranked 24th in the world. It has a lot to do with the improvements that she's made with her ball striking. Going back to 2017, she ranked 100th on the LPGA Tour in greens and regulation. And you can see the incredible steady progress that she's made every single year. There's only a drop in 2020 as far as the percentage goes, but the rank continues to improve every single season. And now top 10 in the ball striking greens and regulation category on the LPGA Tour. So no doubt that's played a huge part into why and how she's become a contender on the LPGA Tour. Still seeking her first LPGA Tour win, but she's knocking at the door a lot more frequently.
10% improvement over the last 5 seasons. Great stuff from Paige. Much more from her in just a little bit. With more on the week in Cincinnati, let's welcome in Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, great to see you. Let's go back to the winner, Allie Ewing. Why was this win on Sunday so special for her and her family?
Well, she didn't know that her husband had showed up on Sunday. So that was you saw all that emotion pour out on the green on 18 when Charlie came out and gave her a hug. And, you know, this is a really lonely life, this life. You know, unless you've been in the traveling circus, it's hard to truly appreciate how tough it can be out there. And I really think that when Allie talks about her support system, you know, you don't have to go very far from her husband. And they got married during the pandemic in 2020 in May. And she won for the first time later that year. And as you said, she's won each season since then. She came straight from Pebble Beach, where she played on Sunday. She had a chance to play before she came out to Ohio. And, you know, what better person to have in your corner than a coach, the Mississippi State coach, her alma mater, you know, as a person to encourage when you're really in the dark times of self-doubt, which she no doubt was dealing with this year, hadn't finished in the top 10 until she broke through with this win. So it takes both the tangible of fixing the putting stroke, and then to keep you in it, it takes the intangible of that support system to keep you mentally in it.
Bethann, Maria Fassi has yet to break through for a win on the LPGA Tour, but she did put on a great display this week, finishing in that solo third place. How impressed are you with what she's accomplished so far in what is still a pretty young LPGA Tour career?
Well, I think it's safe to say that it's been tough and in a lot of ways disappointing when you look at what Jennifer Kupcho has done in contrast. They already won a major, won three times this year. And this was Maria Fassi's first time playing in the final group on Sunday. So, and that was a fantastic shot there. That we love that emotion. Make it enough of that. But honestly, you know, she said, look, I could look at this two ways. You know, that I came up short on Sunday and I wasn't really in it at the end. But quite frankly, I just got outplayed. And instead, look at the positive that coming into this week, we're thinking, could Maria Fassi have to go back to Q school? And now we're looking at, could Maria Fassi play her way at the CME Group Tour Championship? She vaulted up the points race to number 67, and of course the top 60 get into the final event of the season. So, you know, a huge week for Maria Fassi, and it'll be really interesting to see. You know, she said, my back's been up against the ropes all year, and finally I have a little bit of breathing room. So what can she do with this breathing room for the rest of the year? Will be fun as she heads back to Arkansas here in a couple of weeks, or her beloved adopted hometown.
Dynamic player and personality, Bethann. How about Allie Ewing? She marks the 21st different winner on the LPGA this season. There's a lot of golf left in the year, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on this trend.
You know, the record for the most different winners on the LPGA is 26. It happened in 1991, and it happened again in 2018. And I love variety. I'm happy for Allie. I was happy for Gabby Lopez last week. You know, it's fun to see a bunch of different names. But at the same time, I think it's really hard for fans and media to put a headline on the season, to really latch on to something, a storyline, because there's just so much going on. And with a lack of a dominant player, which I don't know that we're going to see one emerge by the end of the year, I think the best that we can hope for is that maybe Brooke Henderson and Minji Lee give us a back and forth for the player of the year that we saw last year with Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda. So, you know, both of these players are neck and neck here for that precious Hall of Fame point that comes with the Rolex Player of the Year award. So hopefully they turn it on at the end of the season to give us something fun to follow.
Well, 21 winners is going to make it very difficult to choose a player of the year, Bethann. How about the rookie of the year? Is that any easier to deduce this year on tour?
Well, that's essentially a two-player race at this point, Taiya Tetteikon and Hyejin Choi. And, you know, when I look at the two of them, you know, obviously on the LPGA, they don't really go in the gray area. You know, you would get a Taiya the leg up here because she's won on tour, where Hyejin hasn't yet. But this is purely a black and white, whoever gets the most points wins. So there's still time for Choi to bump it up. But it's startling when you look at the list of past winners that there hasn't been an American who has won the Louise Suggs Rolex Rookie of the Year since 2005. And that player was Paula Creamer. It's quite a wild statistic.
Speaking of Paula Creamer, good to see the new mom back on tour. She started her week with that ace in the first round. What do you anticipate for her the rest of this season?
Well, I was in Toledo, so it was fun to catch up with Paula in person, and you could just see so much joy on her face about being back inside the ropes and playing for a higher purpose, playing for Baby Hilton. It's just like a new Paula out there, and you know, I was talking to Stacey Lewis that week as well, and you know, here Stacey is, that's the incredible ace of that up and down round to start the week. But Stacey Lewis, you know, she's the Solheim Cup captain. She sits on the LPGA board, and she's a mom. And she told me, you know, with all this going on, she's never had more fun playing golf than she is right now because she has such great perspective. It's her sanctuary. It's kind of where she escapes everything. She's loving the competition. And I think we'll see something similar for Paula, where she won't go back to her room as, before and dissect everything the way she used to. She'll go back and enjoy her time with her baby. And I think that, I wasn't sure if Paula would be a playing mom like a Julie Inkster or a Nancy Lopez. But I think Stacey coming out for this generation and winning, I think has really inspired a lot of players to try it and to have fun with it. And I think the way Paula plays these next few events domestically, I think will tell us a lot about perhaps how long we'll see her doing this. Because right now it seems like she's eating it up.
Great to see Paula back, one of the big names in the game. Beth Ann, and great to see you. Enjoy your Monday. All roads lead to Naples. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week. And speaking of Naples, yeah, that's the final event, November 17th through the 20th. Tiburon Golf Club, can't wait to see how this season unfolds. We take a look at this remaining LPGA Tour schedule. Golf Today, back after this.
Scottie Scheffler's first runaway win this year was at the Masters. His second came at the weekend when he was announced as the overwhelming choice among his peers for PGA Tour Player of the Year. Just how decisive was it? And we're almost at the end of the bleakest 18 days of the year, the PGA Tour offseason. What are the most tantalizing storylines as we get set to do it all again? And the President's Cup is only a week away. It's time for some bold predictions. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Monday. Damon Hack, Eamon Lynch. New season ahead, new storylines, new victories, some heartbreak. I think it's going to be a bang-up year, my friend.
Yeah, it's very easy for us and fans to say, well, we just finished one a couple of weeks ago. But for a lot of guys who maybe didn't advance either to the playoffs or didn't advance very far in the playoffs, they've been sitting at home for a month. They're probably itching to get back out there.
No doubt. A lot of trophies to be won. Well, in case you missed it, and Eamon kind of mentioned it in the tease over the weekend, on Saturday, the reigning Masters champ, Scottie Scheffler, was a guest on College Game Day in Austin, Texas. Now, the Longhorn alum was surprised with the Jack Nicklaus Award for PGA Tour Player of the Year. So check
this out. You win the Masters, one of the perks of winning the Masters, you get to wear that green jacket. We weren't able to bring it today. But we don't want you to go in the stadium empty-handed. We want to thank you for making the effort to come out here. So we wanted to give you a little something, a little gift, if you don't mind. Bring it over here, Coach. We'll let you pull the thing off. There you go. And there it is, the Jack Nicklaus Award given to the 2022 PGA Tour Player of the Year. Congratulations.
That's pretty cool.
A little teary. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Scottie Scheffler is going to have to start reinforcing the shelves in the trophy case right now. This is what his 2022 PGA Tour Player of the Year award-winning season looks like. Four victories, including the Masters, four runner-up finishes, including the U.S. Open and the Tour Championship, and 11 total top 10 finishes, including the second place in the FedEx Cup. Damon, you look at a resume like that for 1 year. Are you surprised that he wins Player of the Year over Cam Smith and Rory McIlroy as the other two nominees? And I know you raised an eyebrow at me last week when I suggested Rory was on that ballot purely as window dressing, that it was.
Yeah.
Only a two-horse race at best.
Yeah, I think it was Scottie's year. I think the incredible depth of the resume, the different golf courses that he won on, the fact that he won the Masters and kind of carried that number one ranking, I think, by playing a lot of great golf and kind of coming out of nowhere. I mean, this is someone who won in Phoenix, and all of a sudden, you know, the floodgates open, and we always hear that in sport. Well, now the floodgates are going to open, and they don't always do that. And they did for this player, and I just thought that he kind of traveled to these big-time tournaments under the radar so much because Tiger was in the mix, you know, in the conversation, you know, on property, or PGA Tour versus LIV was a big story. And I just thought that Scotty continued to kind of motor through the season by picking off some big-time victories. Not a surprise at all that it was such an overwhelming win for him. How about you?
And the manner in which he won the Masters and admitted afterwards that he had wept on the Sunday morning because he wasn't sure he was ready for that moment. To me, that was a kind of a telling moment in just how he found his own pathway through this season. And he won against pretty robust fields. I mean, he won the match play. We're out of the best show up. He won, obviously, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and he won the WM Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
Those are some pretty good fields. And you could make an argument that Cam Smith obviously won the Open, won the Players. But Cam Smith's third victory, the Century Tournament of Champions, smaller field, quality guys from the year before, but still some guys may have sort of watered down his vote based on that. But primarily, it was a vote for a guy who was still here, a guy who deserved
yes.
it, but a guy who was not at LIV. And to me, the most interesting part of this, it's the first time ever the PGA Tour announced what the voting percentage was. And they said that 89% of votes cast by players went to Scottie Scheffler. And that's clearly a way of heading off the conspiracy theorists who would suggest that Cam Smith left, therefore the vote was somehow rigged against him, because those people are always waiting for any opportunity. But I hope this is a signal to some new transparency in terms of how the tour goes about its business these days and going forward, is that we actually do find out what the voting percentage is in awards like this.
It was a slam dunk vote for Scottie Scheffler. Harder to decipher, I think, is the defining moment of his season. So I'll take two, if we don't mind. The match play, where he became world number one. And I kept hearing Coach John Fields from Texas, who we saw in that clip from Austin, his short game mirrors the best of all time. And I kind of thought that was just kind of school pride talking. And then we see this young man arrive to Austin, and he's getting up and down from everywhere and holding out and beating Kevin Kistner. I'm like, man, Scottie Scheffler's short game is no joke. It's not just that he hits the ball a mile. He is, you know, they call him a five-tool player if he was a baseball player. I think all 14 clubs in his bag work and work well. So this was kind of defining moment A, and then of course B, the Masters tournament, and the fact that you mentioned it, you know, sleeping on that three-shot lead and waking up Sunday and telling his wife, I'm not sure I'm ready for this moment, and going out and proving that you are, the throaty roars for Rory McIlroy on that second nine notwithstanding, and be able to hold off to win his first major championship. I just felt that it was a year of growth for this player, someone who, you know, was a ballyhooed amateur and a great collegiate as well, but to go through a season and win four times, and the quality of wins, major, match play, invitational, the circus that is in Phoenix, I mean, four very different impressive wins.
And it's so strange to think that Scottie Scheffler's last win was the one that put the green jacket on his shoulders back in April. To me, the most defining moment of his season came after that. At the US Open, because he'd missed the cut at the PGA Championship. And because there is this recency bias in all commentary that's out there these days, it's this idea of what have you done for me lately? And with the second place finish at Brookline in the US Open, to me it signaled Scottie Scheffler saying, I'm going to play like the world number one. I'm not flatlining here. I'm getting back on the horse. And he kept putting himself back in the mix. And he made a great run out of there. He came so close to catching Matt Fitzpatrick on that Sunday at the Country Club. And then through the second, it's not as though he took the second half of the season off at all, the second half of the calendar year. He had three top three finishes after that and came awfully close to winning a FedEx Cup as well. So it's hard to argue with the 89% of players who thought that he was their guy for the year.
Yeah, it would not surprise me at all if Scottie Scheffler continues to play great golf in 2023 and perhaps goes back-to-back for Player of the Year. All right, folks, it was a big week for sports, as you know. Thursday, the NFL season kicked off. NBC, SoFi Stadium, the Bills blew out Super Bowl champion Rams 31-10. Man, what a blowout. I mean, Josh Allen picking up right where he left off. And speaking of season openers, here we go. PGA Tour tees off on Thursday in Napa, California with the Fortinet Championship. It'll mark the final wraparound season as the tour will shift to a January through August schedule in 2024. Some other notable changes are coming this season as well. 12 elevated events with purses north of $20 million. Top players will compete in at least 20 events, and all fully exempt members guaranteed $500,000. Paige McKenzie rejoins us on this Monday. What are you most looking forward to?
You know, one of the most exciting things for me to watch, especially in the second half of the year, was an inspired Rory McIlroy. I mean, you could even go back to the Masters where he holed out and said this was the most fun that he's ever had, and then the win in Canada and ultimately winning the FedEx Cup, where you saw a player that put the PGA Tour, I won't want to say on his back, but he very much defended the honor of the PGA Tour through all of this live discussion. And it's been fun to watch. I mean, I think there's players, and it was Vision 54, it was Lynn Marriott and Pia Nielsen that said, there's two kinds of players. There's the perspiration and there's inspiration. And those that get inspired, and that's why they play well, versus those that just work hard and that's why they play well. And for me, Rory McIlroy proved that he's an inspiration type of player. And going into next season in the Masters, and everybody knows what that means, can he carry that through and ultimately complete the career Grand Slam? That's the biggest question mark for me, and that's what I'm most looking forward to.
Paige, when you look back at this year when Rory did kind of put the tour on his back, still won several times, had a wonderful season, would you look at that and say that the distraction maybe took that season down a notch or two potentially from what it might have been had he not put the tour on his back?
No, I think it gave him purpose. I think it gave him a goal. I do not believe that it would be a distraction for him. For other people, it may. I think back to when Stacey Lewis won in Portland. She dropped her. She had a seven-year winless streak. I think something like 12 runner-up finishes. And prior to going to Portland, she pledged that she would donate her entire check to Hurricane Harvey relief in Texas. And then what do you know? She goes out and she wins the golf tournament. There's certain players that I think are spurred on by something greater than themselves. And perhaps Rory McIlroy, in the beginning of his career, was self-motivated enough just to have pride in what he was doing. But I think now, at this point, especially in his career, there's something greater that he's fighting for. And I think that has proven to elevate his game, not distract from his game.
I agree. I think this has been a crystallizing moment for Rory McIlroy.
I think it has as well. I mean, I do wonder, given how much work he had to put into this with board meetings and everything else that he was part of, whether or not it did somehow distract the attention. But the resume that he's compiled at the end of the year, and he's the one who walked away with a FedEx Cup trophy and $18 million. So I'd like to be distracted in that way as well. Now, I know this is a big week for you, Damon.
Yes.
Because the PGA Tour is going to Napa.
Oh.
And no one loves the combination of grape and golf more than you.
Right.
But what are you looking forward to in terms of the broader season? We know Paige is looking for that inspirational Rory McIlroy. What are you looking for?
Yeah, someone else who was in a bunch of those meetings was Tiger Woods. And I want to know, like a lot of us, how much we're going to see Tiger in 2023. I was standing in the media area during the Open Championship. I had interviewed Tiger before the first round, and then Henny Koyak of Sky Sports interviewed Tiger and asked him, there's rumors that this is it for you. This is going to be a swan song. And the look on Tiger's face was like, who, me? No. I mean, he must have said it eight times to kind of put down any doubt that he's going to retire when he crosses that Swilkin Bridge. So I want to know how often we'll see him. He said his leg may not improve much beyond where it is today, but he is Tiger Woods. And we know how different he is wired compared to everybody else. So I'm just curious, will we see him again a couple of times next year? What will he bring? You know, well, I imagine we'll see him in Orlando for the PNC. I imagine we'll see him at the Hero in Bahamas. But I just want to know, on the PGA Tour schedule, and more particular for him, the major championships, when we'll see him and how much he'll have.
Do you expect to see him much outside of the major championships?
I really don't. The only way I would say we would see him is if he feels that, A, he's healthy enough, and B, it's part and parcel of a run-up. You know, traditionally, famously, he would use tournaments, and he would win these tournaments, but Bay Hill, for example, in March, to kind of begin his march toward the major championship season and schedule, or Torrey Pines in January. I'm not sure at this time of life for him in 58 degrees or 62 degrees with that marine layer. Yes, it does get chilly in San Diego, despite what the brochures and commercials tell you, that's going to be the best recipe for him. But I think in the springtime, if he thinks it's feasible for his body to handle a tour event here or there, I wouldn't rule it out. But we know that the back-to-backs and the two tournaments in 3 weeks at this time of life might be harder for him to do.
What I'm most looking forward to seeing is the impact that Tiger actually had this year when he didn't play very much alongside with Rory McIlroy, because next season, or this season we're about to open, is very much a bridge year into 2024 when the PGA Tour resumes the old calendar season. And Jay Monahan said at Eastlake at the Tour Championship that he was, in the next 45 to 60 days, going to be putting more flesh on the bones of what this new season looks like, what those elevated events look like, what is the international component to all of this. So at some point, I would expect this fall, we're going to start seeing more details come out of what this new framework looks like. And to me, that's an important thing to do, because we're still going to have this competing narratives of live on one side and the PGA Tour on the other. That's not going away anytime soon. But what we have seen from the PGA Tour seems to have won the support of all of the top players who are remaining here, 14 of the top 15, Cam Smith being the only one who left. And what we need to see now is the details, where the rubber's meeting the road here. And that the onus is on Jay Monahan and his team to produce that over the course of the coming weeks, and at least then present a new reality of what this tour is going to look like going forward.
In particular, you know, what the PIP is going to look like and how that will affect competition and the significance of popularity versus hoisting trophies and how that balance is going to work going forward. That's what I'm most interested in terms of how 2023 will look from a tour standpoint.
Speaking of hoisting trophies, it feels like I'm the only golfer from Ireland who didn't do that on Sunday. From Shane Lowry at Wentworth to Potter Carrington, the Ascension Charity Classic. Highlights from the senior citizens' win in golf today. This was the Pro-Am at Wentworth earlier in the week. Shane Lowry's playing partner going a little bit hustle right here. Something we can appreciate, Shane. But he made an impact. It's a good job Shane picked up the check by the end of the week to pay for the damage to the windshield. Shane actually tweeted that whoever owns that car ought to send him a direct message and he would pay for a new windshield.
Wow, that's good karma, though. He ended up winning the tournament. So that maybe was not a winning moment, though, you know, denting that car. But time now for Win Grip's winning moments as we give you one more look at Shane Lowry's victory on Sunday, the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Chasing this title for more than a decade and finally able to get it done after some near misses, 2011, 2014, 2017 as well, kissing the trophy on Sunday. Back in the winner's circle for the first time since his 2019 Open victory at Royal Portrush. And you know what? Another Irishman had a pretty good week at the Ascension Charity Classic round four. Patrick Harrington, par four, 14th and second.
Knocks this one up to 5 feet. Made birdie. That got him to 15 under par. A two-shot lead over Y.E. Yang.
It wasn't that long ago. Patty was in contention at Kiowa in the PGA Championship. Here he is at the par 5, 15th to second, staring it down.
How much have we seen that little tongue stuck out with that look as he's staring it down over the years? Got that on the green. He faces an eagle putt from 6 feet.
Tell you what, he... one of the great stares, I thought, you know, the height of his power, kind of Mark Messier-ish, Raymond Floyd, Lanny Watkins, you name it. Now here's Patty chipping off the green, 16.
Uh-oh. That's that short of the hole. He would bogey, fell to 15 under par, and the lead is down to 2.
You can see those eyes there burning a little bit. Now the par 4. 8 is a bogey. He had room. He had the room to bogey this last.
Finished at 14 under. That was victory over Y.E. Yang by a single shot.
Look at that big smile now. Able to get it done in St. Louis, Missouri. One shot victory. Steve Stricker continuing to play well. And the timeless Bernhard Langer just 3 shots back. Now, tell you what, Patrick Harrington, as we mentioned, has just been absolutely on fire. Last 7 starts, 3 wins. T14 is his worst result, that at the Boeing Classic. Now, after his latest win, Patty tried to ring Shane Lowry to congratulate him on his victory at Wentworth.
Look, God, he's a lightweight. He must have been gone to bed. There you go. I did get to watch his golf before I went out. It was nice, nice feeling. You see him win and then you're going out. So. But he's obviously a lightweight. Got to bed early. Cheers, Shane.
Cheers indeed. It was a tough morning after a big night partying. I mean, Rory was supposed to have been at this party as well. Shane knew he had an early wake up, some 6:45, and had a cup of Joe aiming to try to shake off the cobwebs.
And it was 3 a.m. in British time when Padraig was attempting to call him. So in Shane's defense, plus there's a lot of commentary going around today that poor Shane is wearing the same clothes from yesterday. It may actually be one of his sponsor's shirts, but in his defense,
yes,
he did post another video of having his last bottle of beer of the night, and he was wearing a different shirt while he was partying last night. So obviously he's just the man in black, because that was a black t-shirt as well. But we will not have him slander that he is actually waking up in the clothes in which he competed yesterday.
As Port Rush taught us, the man knows how to celebrate. Well, the countdown officially on for the President's Cup at Quail Hollow. I'll tell you what, we're making some bold predictions after the break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Next week, Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina will host the President's Cup for the very first time. And here is the international team that will take on the United States, anchored by a couple of Masters champions, Hideki Matsuyama and Adam Scott, and the team captained, of course, by Trevor Immelman, who joined us last week to talk about how his team is going to approach the week.
We're absolutely the underdogs. You know, we're going to be representing underdogs all over the world that week, whether it be, you know, in sports, in business, if it's kids in school that are underdogs out there, you know, we're that team. We're going to be out there fighting really hard to prove that we belong.
And who will they be fighting? This squad of 12 decorated. In fact, Davis Love III, the captain of the United States, told us last week about the strength of this 12 and then the next 12 guys that he could have taken. Eamon Lynch, a lot of star power on Team USA. So how about a bold prediction for next week's President's Cup?
I'm going to predict that the U.S. team, which on paper might be the strongest team they have assembled since the 1981 Ryder Cup, when 11 of the 12 guys won major championships. The biggest lead the United States has ever had in the history of either President's Cup or Ryder Cups was 2017, President's Cup at Liberty National. On Saturday night, they led 14.5 to 3.5. I'm going to predict that the US will at least match that on Saturday evening. Now, don't at me here, Immelman, because Trevor thinks that I'm wrong on every subject. Doesn't
yes,
matter what
does.
It is.
Yes, he does.
And I know he's going to think that I'm wrong on this one as well. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to predict that the U.S. team so outmatches the international squad that they're going to run away with it.
Yeah, you're seeing the strength of this American squad. I'm seeing the potential for overconfidence. And it concerns me, and it concerned me last week when Davis put out there for all of us to hear how good not just the first dozen were, but the second dozen. He said the quiet part out loud, Eamon. Which is why I'm going to say my bold prediction is going to be, for only the second time in the history of these matches, the international team is going to shock the world. They're going to find a way on the voice of Trevor Immelman, on the back of Adam Scott and Hideki Matsuyama, and on the birdies of Tom Kim and Sungjae Im.
I knew this.
You knew it was coming.
What are you predicting? Tom Kim goes 5-0.
He could do a Brandon Grace. I do think it's possible, and I'm concerned about the overconfidence potentially for the United States with everybody telling them how good they are and how good the guys that they left home were and how good maybe the next 12, maybe all the way down to 36. Why not just keep going? I think this international team has a rallying cry right in front of its face.
I agree with you in the sense that there is a danger of overconfidence. There's also danger of a little extra pressure coming on the United States team here because they are such overwhelming favorites. No matter what way you try to splice and dice the numbers, it doesn't change. The US team is still overwhelming favourites. So that has to come with a little added pressure. Plus, the international team has a built-in, I don't want to use the word excuse, but it's a built-in narrative that their team has been significantly impacted by defections to live, much more so than the United States team, when they lost guys like Ansar and Cam Smith. So I think there is all of that narrative going on, but I don't see that being enough to give the firepower the international team lacks.
I just think that Trevor has the right message, adopting underdogs of every stripe, golf, sports, life, and adopting that rallying cry, and that this team is backed into a corner, counted out, decimated by the live defections, and they have something to play for, and they're going to bring out their best at Quail Hollow.
The captain of the Titanic had the right message, too. It was men and women and children overboard, and it didn't matter much at the end. The messaging is fine. It's noble. It's what a captain does. The reality on the golf course, I suspect, is going to be a little different.
For the life of the President's Cup, I hope it is close at Quail Hollow. We'll see what happens.